You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 8 October, U.S. trade balance due later today, expected minus $70 billion. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Chantal Marx from FNB Wealth and Investment, Baldwin and Kogar M3, same sector, different markets, different trading updates, opportunity perhaps in either or. Kingsley Williams from Satrix, India local and tech opportunities in the market, Wayne Abramson from ATM Solutions, cash effect on consumer behavior and the South African economy. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, as one Pick and Pay closes, a Checkers opens, often literally in the same place, Hello Hyde Park. Business day, Namibia's aspirations towards green hydrogen are going nowhere. Only one of eight pilot projects appears to be making progress, and production still far off. Morning markets, US is red, S&P down 1%, NASDAQ 1.2% lower. East, mostly red. We've got Sydney up. Down 0.1%, Tokyo up 0.33%, Hong Kong down 5.9%, Tencent off 4.9%. Commodities mostly red, gold 2,661, Brent is green at 79.70, PGMs platinum 798 and palladium 1,005, Rand 1743, Bitcoin 62,600. Top 40 opening call, looking for a 700 point red open, that is 0.9% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Chantal Marx, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the early morning time. I said in the intro there, we've got Baldwin and Kogar M3. Baldwin update last week, Kogar yesterday. Disclaimer, I hold Kogar M3. Contrasting updates, but whilst they're both in the same sector, building houses or apartments, very much different markets, different businesses, and hence vastly different updates. I mean, is there opportunity? I mean, surely with an improving South African consumer.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, both these companies address scarcity in housing in South Africa. And as you rightly said, different markets, right? So Calgro would be kind of the mid to lower end, while Baldwin would look at towards the high middle to higher end. And I think that when you're talking about the price points, what Baldwin is offering is a lot higher, which means that when interest rates are fluctuating or interest rates are increasing, it becomes very difficult for people to actually afford buying a new house or a new apartment. But that changes very quickly when people start feeling more comfortable with their finances, interest rates come down, inflation come down. And I think for Baldwin in particular, an improvement in confidence and hopefully an improvement in confidence in the Gauteng area could really help this business going forward. It's been tough going for both companies. So Calgro's had a very good last 18 to 24 months from a share price perspective. I mean, year to date, the stock's up 39%. While Baldwin has really, really struggled. And since listing, it's down 11% per year. But even if you look at Calgro over the last 10 years, that stock's down 4% per year. So both companies have had their issues, but I think that we are in a sweet spot now for these home builders. And I could justify holding both. Both companies are super cheap. Yeah. Baldwin 3.8 times forward PE, Calgro 2.7 times forward PE. The only thing I'm concerned about with Calgro, I think, is the fact that we're going to get a big management change.
Yeah, that is true. We've got both the CEO and the CFO exiting. Ben PMR Herber coming back. What I also like about them is they've kind of both gone into annuity different ways. Calgro's got the Memorial Parks, which is sort of not quite in their wheelhouse, but and I know that they're looking to get that to a point where it covers head office. Baldwin's got fiber and other bits to it, which kind of helps them, particularly in these tougher periods. And there'll obviously be some, I suppose, cream on the top when the better times return.
Yes, I really like that as well. I think what Baldwin's been doing at their complexes is just so clever because those services are going to be provided externally anyway. And I think by actually aggregating it, they're able to offer the people who live in their complexes with a lower price point.
Yeah.
And they get that annuity income from solar electricity and fiber and all the rest. And Calgary's Memorial Parks business is so interesting because they're using little pieces of land that you can't actually build on because it's too small or awkwardly shaped. And they're utilizing that land beautifully. And even though it's not annuity income in the sense that people will kind of pay for graves forever, the lay-by service that they offer does kind of have an annuity type profile. So yeah, I really like it. I see that when we're looking, I think that when we're looking forward, you're probably going to get another few months of difficult times for Baldwin, slowing growth for the year ended Feb. We already know Calgary is going to grow quite steadily this year. But I can see a scenario where both companies see earnings expand quite nicely in 2026 and 2027. Yeah. Their financial years, of course.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And I take your point. Memorial Park's not quite annuity, but they do have that lay-by. We'll leave it there. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investment. Always appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Kingsley Williams. He's the Chief Investment Officer at Satrix. Kingsley, appreciate the time today. A recent note that you put out, you headlined, risk in investing is a feature, not a bug. I think we intuitively all look at that and nod our head sagely and say yes, but I think we don't often fully appreciate that often enough. Investing is risky. That's where the returns come from.
Absolutely, Simon, and always a pleasure to speak with you and all your listeners. I think you see this most clearly when markets take a downturn and investors then being worried about, you know, the negative returns they've experienced, or even when they're investing in a particular strategy, worried, you know, that it may not yet have gone down, but they might worry about how much they might lose over the next 12 months. And quite frankly, if investors are worried about that downside risk, they probably shouldn't be investing in those risky assets in the first place. But I think therein lies another risk, in that investors can end up becoming too conservative.
Yeah.
And that then poses an even bigger, longer term risk, where if you don't take enough well rewarded risk, you end up going to not be growing your capital base or keeping pace with inflation. You're not going to build any increased wealth over time. So it's really a case of knowing how long you're going to be invested for, and then making sure that you invest in well-rewarded asset classes for that duration.
And the other secret around it as well is diversification. If everything you have is in, I don't know, NVIDIA, you're going to struggle sleeping most of the time, either from excitement or fear. And on diversification, in the note you put out, you spoke around two regions, one being India, which is, in terms of population, I think the largest population in the world, one of the top economies in the world, highly rated in terms of valuation, but really strong growth coming through. And beauty is there's an ETF for that as well.
There is, Simon. Yeah, India is an incredibly exciting market. We've seen it grow tremendously in terms of its market performance. And that is, as you pointed out, off the back of its strong economic growth. I think it was a year or two ago that it became the most populous country in the world, surpassing China. So it's the largest economy from a population perspective. But unlike China, does not have some of the demographic challenges that China is facing, you know, given its one-child policy from, you know, over many, many decades, which, you know, is now causing an aging population problem in that economy. India has still a relatively young population, you know, with your typical population bell curve, growing young population entering working age. And another feature of India, which I'm sure we can all relate to, is it has a very highly educated population as well, often servicing developed markets, particularly the US, from a business process outsourcing perspective, a very vibrant technology software services sector. So yeah, a lot of aspects to it that are very encouraging and sort of are demanding that high valuation premium, actually quite closely linked to the types of multiples from a PE ratio that you would typically see in the US. very much because of the software and the services sectors that it operates within.
I want to touch on the US in a moment. The other market you were talking around was Africa. Obviously, South Africa is a big part of that. Our market's had a really good run since, well, now we've got, the story, we know them all. It's a new government, a functioning ESCOM, rates coming down, two-pot. And our market, notwithstanding the recent run, it's still not expensive relative to its long-term average.
Yeah, I was chatting to someone earlier this morning and just saying how short memories can be when it comes to financial markets. But we forget that we've been living in a very lackluster to zero growth environment for pretty much a decade.
Yeah.
And that's been the narrative, you know, and our equity market has really struggled to keep pace with what developed markets are doing. And there's been an enormous gap opened up over those last 10 years of, quite frankly, lost opportunities that our market has suffered and our economy has suffered. But pleasingly, it looks like we're getting our act together. And it's amazing what a little bit of confidence can do as that becomes its own virtuous circle. And, you know, confidence breeds further confidence and lifts multiples in the market. Having a stable electricity supply is a huge confidence booster. You can just imagine what a dampener that is to potential investors looking to invest in South Africa and then seeing that the lights are out for 2 hours or even longer. Not having that as a feature of our economy instills a huge amount of confidence and gives businesses and investors and entrepreneurs the confidence to invest in our economy. And that creates its own virtuous circle of growth.
Yeah, but it just makes us as individuals feel better. Load shedding was just absolutely soul-sapping. Last question. You mentioned tech in India. Obviously, there's the US Tech Magnificent Seven, but wider than that, if we look at sort of the NASDAQ, the tech-heavy ETF, it's had a really spectacular run since the lows of the 2022 bear market, but it really is supported by revenue. There is underlying earnings growth happening there, and it is a critical part of the global economy, fundamentally different to where it was 2.5 decades or so ago.
Yes, and I think we need to always contextualize the growth and the performance that we've experienced within the NASDAQ relative to previous crises that we've had, you know, at the turn of the millennium with the dot-com bubble and the subsequent crash. I mean, there was a lot of speculative valuations that weren't underpinned by real earnings. Mm. Now, that's not to suggest that the US is not expensive. By many accounts, it is deemed expensive and trading at certainly much higher multiples than it has over its entire history. So I think there is always a degree of caution that should be applied when investing in the US specifically, and specifically within the more expensive tech sector and the larger cap stocks there. But this is, again, where diversification comes in. You want to have a broadly diversified portfolio, not only pinning your hopes on tech to continue shooting the lights out and that to be the only story in town, but to make sure you diversify across investment styles, across investment sectors, across regions from an equity perspective, and then even broader than that, looking at other asset classes outside of equities to counterbalance your portfolio in the event that, you know, there is a global recession, God forbid, or some other economic downturn, you know, that could potentially hit those stretched valuations quite hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Markets don't go in straight line from bottom left to top right. We wish they did, but they absolutely don't. Kingsley Williams, Chief Investment Officer at Satrix, always appreciate the time. And that's our question today on LinkedIn and Twitter. Talking around India, I'm looking at that five-year chart. Man, it really is looking like a chart. Are you investing into India? Certainly, there's a local ETF. There are global ETFs listed New York and Europe. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Wayne Abramson, CEO at ATM Solutions. Wayne, appreciate the time. I'm one of those old school folks who's always got some cash in my wallet, but I'm always surprised by data. And you put out a note talking around recent data. South Africans use cash. 87% of South Africans are still using cash for some, if not all, of their payments. I mean, it has a significant role to continue playing in our economy.
Yes, good morning, Simon, and thanks for having me on the show. As you say, some interesting facts to come out of the recent SARB payment study as far as consumer behavior is concerned, that 87% of South Africans still use cash as the primary payment choice. And cash makes up around 56% of payment volumes, although it represents 21% of overall payment value. And yeah, debit cards have the majority in terms of value, which talks to a higher basket size on card, which one would expect. And as many as 94% of South Africans draw cash monthly, with a third withdrawing all the deposited funds at once, and over half the population access cash at ATMs. So South Africans still rely heavily on cash. Historically, cash growth has largely followed GDP growth, although that changed somewhat following COVID, where cash demand declined marginally. But cash is still very widely used, and for many good reasons. Cash is trusted, both for the payer and the recipient. It's widely accepted. It's cheap to use. It's private. It supports financial inclusion for those who don't have access to digital services, and it's resilient when digital systems go down, etc. So is the end of cash near? The answer is no.
I take your point in that, and particularly, I mean, the end of cash near, not at all. I mean, we're seeing a rise in fintech and multiple payment different solutions, but they often cases lack that elegance of an easy payment of cash. And part of the challenge of cash, perhaps, or one of the challenges it has, is it's not cheap. Drawing from an ATM in many cases can be an expensive process, or you have to simply get to an ATM. I'm thinking of someone in a rural area with perhaps a state pension. It's that access and cost that is perhaps one of the hindrances in the cash payment space.
Yes, I think this is where, you know, independent operators like ourselves have an important part to play. You know, you might have seen in recent media that the number of bank ATMs has in fact reduced by 4,000 or so over the last few years, as well as many bank branches. But independent payments companies such as ATM Solutions, which consumers will know as Cash Express, are stepping up to fill the gap, ensuring that cash remains within reach for all, including the underserved. We were mandated by the SARB as an independent clearing system participant last year, which allows us direct access into the national payment system and which significantly enhances our ability to drive financial inclusion more broadly without having to work via a bank or a third party. As far as the cost of accessing cash is concerned, cash withdrawals have actually become more affordable in many instances, with some of the biggest banks no longer charging their clients a SaaSwitch network fee. So customers aren't paying extra in certain instances to withdraw from other ATMs, including our own. So consumer education is important. You know, there's a disconnect between perceptions of ATM withdrawal costs versus a reality of who levies fees, which in many cases is actually your own bank trying to keep you within its own ecosystem. So this ultimately drives consumer choice. You know, our goal is to empower consumers with the tools they need to transact in the way that best suits them, whether it's through cash, digital platforms, or a combination of both. So that's particularly important in the underserved areas. We might be the only point of presence in an underserved area, and without that, consumers would have to take a taxi to travel to access cash, which obviously becomes more costly.
And that's an important point, an important role that you play. I mean, I will pull up to a petrol station here in Johannesburg, Rosebank, and see ATMs from three or four different banks, and I just scratch my head. I mean, that can't be efficient. In the more rural areas, it's absolutely not, and no one bank's going to go in, hence an independent, such as yourself, sort of solves for that problem.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right, Sam.
We'll leave it there. That's Wayne Abramson. He's CEO of ATM Solutions. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Mateta Tolari from RMB yesterday. We're talking the US jobs data came out Friday. Just more strong jobs data. Unemployment actually improved to 4.1% from 4.2%. It was expected to be unchanged, but non-farm payrolls came in at some 250,000. We asked you if you thought the US economy is strong enough to avoid a slowdown. I mean, we're almost saying, you know, recession is off the table. I think was it JP Morgan's yesterday? Today said their odds of a recession in the US is now only 15%. Just over 40% said it'll slow just a little. The rest evenly split between saying, look, the US economy is doing great, no worries, and the rest of you saying, look, there are troubles ahead. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Food prices on the rise again.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.